Our last guest today is a doctor who's currently going through his own firsthand experience with cancer. His name is David Flockhart, and he's been on this program many times to explain issues related to his specialty, which is pharmacogenetics. He spent his career observing how people's bodies respond to medications, but now he's observing himself. Today he describes how his brain tumor and the treatments he's undergoing have affected him mentally and physically.
And there's this very interesting thing, Barb, where you lose things that are so intuitive, you can't imagine you would lose them. Picking up a toothbrush, holding a spoon. The first thing I noticed when I came out of the surgery was that I could not text. I'm a texter. You know, I had my iPhone out and I wanted to text my daughter and so forth, and I couldn't text, and I tried to understand why. Why couldn't I text? And the reason was I didn't know where the letters went on a typewriter. So I knew what a W was and an A was, and I could recognize them, but I didn't know where they went on the typeface. So I had to relearn that so that I could text again, a major priority.
Apparently so. So you couldn't... Help me understand this. So you're looking at your phone,
yeah,
and you're able to hit the little, you know, the icon that
I
says
can physically
do it, but then you just look at it and
no, it would be like this. I'd go, okay, I want to say the word am. Where's the A? I don't know. Go around, find it. Right? Where's the M? I don't know. Go around, find it. And then just practice it and practice it and practice it and literally learn the typeface again. And I had to do the same thing with block capital letters, learn how to write again. My writing right after I started in rehab was horrific. I mean, a lot of my staff would say it was normal for a doctor's writing, but I could not write. I couldn't write. So I had to relearn letters, both cursive and block capital. And now I can write. I'm actually pretty good. I'm slow, but my writing, ironically, is a lot more clear than it was before.
Yeah, an autocorrect will always help you out if you need it. Didn't mean to make a worse mistake. So texting is one. What about some other things? When Eric Meslin had mentioned kind of knowing what time it is. I mean, knowing the time, but not knowing the time.
Seeing a clock face, right? If you look at a clock face on a wall and knowing where the one went, I know what one is, but where does it go on a clock face? I have no clue, right? If you are asked to identify where the hands should be for the time 5:45, I have absolutely no clue. I had to relearn. That's spatial. That's knowing where something is in space. And I had to relearn that, too. Now I can do it.
So it wasn't just swelling in the brain. I think about if you have surgery, there might be...
Sure.
Some swelling. Was that part of
it? Oh, of course.
It?
There okay. is some of it that is due to swelling in the brain. But my lesion, remember, this was very careful surgery, right? So it's not swelling all over the brain. It's swelling in this very specific area these guys had identified and worked on. It's anatomically where the lesion is. And this care pattern was continued when I started radiation therapy. So the same kind of fancy imaging stuff comes into play, and these guys and women, I'm sure, design a very, very specific geographic radiation treatment for my specific brain. And that has two implications. One is the same as before. You preserve the person while maximizing the therapeutic effect on the tumor. But the other huge thing about that is that... while doing all of that, it's done really fast. You know, it's done in 10 or 15 minutes. I mean, it blows my mind.
Well, you know medicine and science so well, but here you are now as a patient, and I'm wondering, emotionally and psychologically, going into this of having such knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
How did you process all this?
I was helped by a lot of friends. I mean, I'm now at equilibrium, and that's a useful word for me, because you go down and up and down and up, and then less and less and less and less, and you come to a point where you've achieved some acceptance of what it is. This is not a pretty diagnosis. It has a very poor prognosis, but there's a lot of interesting things about it from the statistical point of view. There are people who survive more than 10 years with this tumor, and there are people who die in a few months with this tumor. And the prognostic variables that predict those things aren't really well identified. And to a genetic person like me or a pharmacogenetic person like me, I'm just amazed. You know, we don't have this stuff yet. But we don't. It's a relatively understudied cancer. And while we're really good at the imaging and we're really good at the radiotherapy, the medical oncology part of it has not advanced in 10 to 15 years. We've not a single new biomarker that's a predictor, effective predictor of response, and we haven't gotten a single new drug. We haven't got anything that's happened in the last 10 or 15 years on the medical side.
Why?
Lots of reasons. I think it's not breast cancer. There's a money thing here, you know. So there aren't the resources for a big disease. There's about 3,000 of these patients a year. There's about 30,000 people die of breast cancer a year. So it's a smaller thing. And even though we're in the decade of the brain, it's still a very challenging thing. And I think one of the huge things about it is the personalization part. And I really learned this during rehab, that every brain is different. It seems obvious. But that means you can't just take your average breast cancer tumor and say, oh, it's grade this and it's, you know, stage that, and boom, we're going to stick you in a box, because every single one of those brains is going to be different. So everybody requires a very specific image-directed thing and probably a very specific medical oncology-directed drug plan as well. But we've hardly started on that area.
So what's next? Obviously, the surgery went extremely well. So what is the treatment now?
Well, the surgery went extremely well, and I'm amazingly functional afterwards. So those are two very strong predictors of how well I'll do in the long run. And I'm lucky in other ways also. I have a very supportive family, and I have an amazingly supportive medical community around me. So those are all pluses. Next, after radiation and chemotherapy, is I get a holiday. So for about a month. So I'm going to go and spend as much money as I can in Las Vegas. No. But I do get a month off. And then I go into long-term chemotherapy for 6 months, which is 5 days a month of chemotherapy, which is given by mouth, and then 23 days of break. So it's not that bad, I think. So that's the next step.
What are the drugs?
So the drug
singular
is temozolomide, which is a DNA alkylating agent. That means it attacks the genetic material and messes it up, for want of a better term, and then interferes with the tumor's ability to repair itself while preserving the body's normal ability to repair itself. That's the idea of the drug. This class of drugs was identified in the early 1980s, late 80s, early 90s. And it's been the standard of care for sure since then. And the last clinical trials that define the current standard of care were published in 2005 or so. That means they were really conducted in 2003 or so. So a long way back.
Anybody nationally or internationally doing anything interesting in terms of clinical trials and everything else that you're following or looking into?
Huge amount. So there's a lot going on. And I think a lot of people are very excited about immune therapies for this disease and others, obviously. So there is a lot going on. But it's not, you know, when you talk to people and they say there's a huge amount going on, we've made a huge amount of progress, and then you lay that against, well, you guys haven't come up with a single new drug in the last 10 or 15 years, and you haven't come up with a single new therapeutic plan, dosing regimen, biomarker. I think it doesn't say anything bad about the researchers. It says that there's not a lot of time and money being spent on this thing.
That was Dr. David Flockhart. He's a professor of cancer epidemiology and genetics at the Indiana University School of Medicine. We'll share more of that conversation next week.